Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Well, you know you're listening to Talk Rope Nation. You might know I'm Jim Ross, the voice of AEW, and we're glad you're with us. We're going to have one hell of a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I finished these fights.
Give me a hell yeah.
Top Rope Nation.
Learn to love it. It's the best thing going today.
We're back with you, episode 163 of Top Rope Nation, and boy, do I have a treat for you. Longtime listeners of the show, you're going to be excited. We got someone back on the line who hasn't been with us. I think it's been a week and a half since he's been on the show. So bringing him back on the line, kind of been running into some scheduling conflicts, trying to get us all together. So, you know, Justin and I did the show last week with BJ and Jeremy with the two jabronis, super pod, I guess you could call it. And then on Monday's show, I was with Garrett from the Fight Game Media podcast. So today, here as we record on Wednesday afternoon, it's back to being the Ryan and Kyle show, like the early days of Top Rope Nation. So we're here and we're bringing you back on the podcast after a week and a half. How you been, Kyle?
Great. It's the afternoon. I am fresh. I am not drunk. And I am ready to rock and roll, baby.
I'm not used to this. I'm sitting down in my office. I got the window open. I'm looking outside. It's daylight. Usually when we record, it's like late hours. So this is much, much different. I might bring a little bit different energy to the show. We shall see. But we've got some stuff to talk about, Kyle. We've got the agenda in front of us. There's a lot going on in wrestling this week, both good and bad. And I think when we were talking on Monday night, the thing that we wanted to make sure to talk about was what happened on Raw. And this has kind of been the big topic on social media the last few days. And that is, of course, the Raw Underground reveal. WWE built this up throughout the show. There were multiple insiders on Twitter throughout the day noting that you wanted to tune in and to see what they had planned, that it was something very, very different. I think Voices of Wrestling had the best report out ahead of time that I saw. I mean, they had a lot of the details, the fact that there was going to be the dancers, that Shane McMahon was involved, the shoot fighting aspect of it, I guess they're trying to make it look like shoot fighting. very divisive among the fan base, Kyle. What did you think of Raw Underground?
Well, it would be foolish to completely write it off or to emotionally invest in it after week one, I think. As wrestling fans, we really need to stop evaluating things in such a vacuum. Mm-hmm. I think it goes for matches, angles, whatever. I think we're so fixated on, hey, this happened Monday. We've got a podcast Wednesday. Let's, forever judge this thing after 1 week. That's a mistake. Watching it, the thought entered my mind that Raw Underground could, and I do stress the term or word could, work as a modern spin on the old squash format.
Okay.
In the sense that I'm looking at these guys, okay, they had some established guys in there throwing around some no names. It sort of looked impressive the way it was shot. I don't know if you would agree with that, but that was like to my initial thought, like after seeing a couple of the quote unquote fights, I'm like, hey, maybe that's what they're going for here. The modern spin on the old squashes.
Yeah. In that regard, I could see it working. I do think they need to refine the way they're doing it. As far as you mentioned the way it's shot. I think the backdrop's pretty cool. Although I think the dancers just kind of awkward. I don't know. I think they could maybe drop that. It's just the way they kept cutting to the dancers was kind of, I don't know. I didn't think it really fit.
Kelly's expose.
yeah. Too many camera cuts, though. I mean, that was a big complaint among a lot of people. And we know that that's a trend. That's a theme in this company. But, if they stop doing that, it would give it the grittier look that they're probably going for. I mean, less camera cuts. Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's not all negative. I do think that there is a way to make this work. And quite frankly, your friend, Mr. Dolph Ziggler, Kyle, your good buddy, this might have been the best use of Dolph Ziggler in years, to be honest with you. I mean, here's a guy who actually has that real grappling background in college, and they throw him in there, and, you know, I could see Dolph Ziggler working out in that setting, you know, to maybe kind of rejuvenate his character a little bit.
I thought Lashley looked the coolest, to be honest. So, all right, we've taken the glass half full approach, right? But it wouldn't be a wrestling podcast without looking at the glass from a half empty perspective, right? So I do have some questions regarding Raw Underground. One, what is it leading to? That's the key question. Yeah. Are they looking at this as a vehicle to create a new star? Guy they called from NXT, who they gave him a new name, Davocado. I seriously doubt that this is a vehicle for him, but if it's a vehicle for somebody, I guess that could be okay. But what is fair here is to be skeptical, because the WWE's track record, Ryan, as you know, is not good when it comes to following through or paying off angles.
So to say the least.
Yeah, so if they just do this for a few weeks or even a few months, it doesn't lead to anything, then yeah, it's stupid. And for the record, the same thing would apply to the new group, Retribution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Vince McMahon's answer to Antifa.
I was going to bring that up. That's not even in our show notes. I was going to ask you, do you think that's the inspiration here?
Yeah, that's the key, is what is the... It's not just how it was the first week. Were you excited about it? Was it interesting? Was it new? I mean, those are all kind of ancillary questions here. The key is, where does it go to? And then we can look, and if it goes nowhere, then yeah, it's a complete waste of time. But if in 6 months this has created a new star or something, then it's okay. Other questions I have with Raw Underground is, what exactly is the motivation / stakes for these characters to participate? You mentioned Dolph Ziggler. I mentioned Lashley. We saw the Viking Raiders. Like, why were they there? Did they just like hear about it and decide to show up and they just want to throw down? I mean, I guess as a 1 week thing that works, but that's going to have to be explained moving forward. What is the character motivation to be a part of this?
Right.
Also, poor Dio Madden, by the way. Were we supposed
No explanation. Like, why is
were we supposed
here?
To forget his very brief tenure as Raw announcer? Because he was the guy who got squashed by Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah.
For those of you who may have missed it or may have forgotten who Dio Madden is, it just didn't work out for him, his Raw commentary gig. I know Vince was very low on him, I can tell you that. I think Vince was ready to pull the plug after match two on poor Dio Madden in his commentary. But so he was squashed. And then the whole Shane Hurt business dynamic, that'll be interesting. So I did not watch this live. I didn't watch it till last night, Tuesday. And when I read about it, the way it read was the Hurt business sort of took over the gimmick. And I was like, well, that's odd. They just introduced it and you have somebody new taking it over. Is Shane going to be mad about it? Is there going to be a Shane Hurt business feud? But then when I watched it, that's not really how it played out. Like, Shane seemed cool with the Hurt business, owning the ring, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I don't know if where that's going, if anywhere. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, so is the whole purpose of this fight club downstairs, like, so that you can impress Shane McMahon and then he can push you on the main roster? I don't know. I don't really know.
That would be lame. That would be really lame. The best thing that this can do is if somebody new shows up and just looks like really awesome and people are like, I want to see this guy, you know, do the quote unquote traditional wrestling matches.
Yeah, that
would be the best
be
possible
used,
outcome of this. Brawl for All was, of course, intended for Dr. Death to be a world title contender for Steve Austin. We know how that turned out. Now, this is not that. It's not Brawl for All. Obviously, it's carefully scripted what they're doing. But I don't know. We shall see. The WWE's track record's not good. And then, you know, the same... Everything we said about Raw Underground can be applied to Retribution. I know you said you wanted to ask about that. Who is it? needs to be a good logical path. Like, once it's revealed, like, why did they do this? You know, right. The idea of, like, throwing Molotov cocktails at a generator and screwing with WWE's production. Sorry, that doesn't really interest me. It actually just kind of makes for a worse show with the lights flickering.
Yeah.
So, and I thought the most interesting thing, Ryan, I don't know if you saw this. WWE social media, I guess, jumped the gun announcing the group because they really didn't have that much for them.
No, I didn't see this.
Oh, you didn't see this? So, all right, leading up to the show, there was quite a bit of tweets. I even think like the WWE on Fox account had it where they were like, a new group is set to, you know, debut in WWE tonight. And so everyone's like, all right, well, who's this going to be? And all we really got was just, again, what was it? 3-4 guys. And I don't know, maybe one was a girl or maybe it could have been girls. All girls.
Yeah, I think there's 5 people and maybe one of them was a woman, I think.
They're throwing lob and Molotov cocktails at a generator.
Right.
There was really no new group introduced. And there was a report that social media set the WWE social media department sent that out a week too early. That thing about the new group, because really it was just kind of a blink and you'll miss it type thing. But, you know, now they've named them already, which that's odd, isn't it?
Yeah. How do they know the name? They don't know who's in it, but we know what they're calling them. Yeah. So, I don't know.
WWE kind of has learned that this group is calling themselves Retribution. I mean, is this group sending out press releases to the WWE? That sort of is counterintuitive to the whole idea of the gimmick that they're just causing chaos, right? It's like, right. Well, we're gonna screw with your show, we're gonna mess with the production, but we'll also send you very nice press releases explaining our motive.
You know, it's interesting you pointing this out because I guess that makes sense because most of the interest going into Raw, you know, prior to the Underground thing was that there was going to be this new faction. And a lot of the people I was talking to, like I talked to a friend of mine after the show who didn't see it live, and he wanted to know if they revealed who was in the group. I think that was, you know, if you hadn't followed what was going on throughout the day with this new production that they had planned that was going to be similar to Brawl for All, everyone else was kind of looking forward to the show because of this faction idea. And I didn't know it was WWE's social media that kind of was pushing that narrative, but I heard about it and it seemed like that was the big interest in the show. And there really wasn't the payoff. You're right. It was just the power blips throughout the show and then the Molotov cocktail. And it's kind of it. See, we didn't really get any answers. So although Kyle, as we got ready to record the show today and we had all kinds of audio issues, maybe it was Retribution attacking our show's production. Maybe that's why my audio kept cutting out before we went on the air.
They were sick of our negative reviews of the product.
There you go.
They're actually working from Vince. So I don't know where that's going to go. And do they know where it's going to go? That's the key. They need to know where this is going to go. Because when you do, like, masked men angles, for lack of a better term, can work as long as you've gotten, you know who it's going to be, and the motives are logical. You know, even the Black Scorpion drew a rating at first.
Right.
In WCW, opposite Sting, the first clash he was on, that match did a really good rating. The problem was they had no idea who was going to be the Black Scorpion, and the whole thing petered out, and then there was like stupid magic too that didn't help, and that killed the whole thing. So I hope they already know who this is going to be, and the motive is already set. Because if they don't, then it's going to fall flat on its face, most likely.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, but I did want to kind of talk about who might be in the group. If we have any ideas. Now, the one name that jumps out to me is Mustafa Ali because of the whole hacker thing getting dropped. This seems like maybe they would have thrown him into this group once they got the idea to do the group. But I mean, if you look at the roster and the people that would be out for quote Retribution, I'm not sure anyone really stands out unless you go down the line of the people that they released. You know, and if they were able to re-sign some of them and bring them back, maybe they could be out for Retribution. But do you have any ideas?
You know, that's too inside, as far as I'm concerned. If you're just going
to have to explain it, yeah.
Yeah, well, even if you explain it, like, if this whole thing is a bunch of angry mid-carders who aren't being pushed, I don't think that's a good storyline. I just don't.
I could see it working for someone that was a little bit higher up, like a Rusev, who hasn't been around and was released. You know, he comes back and he's going crazy. He's pissed. He wants retribution.
Maybe.
Like it would maybe work for him, but you're right. You know, a lot of the more undercard guys, it probably people wouldn't be invested in, but people have liked Rusev a lot. So I could see it working for him, but to come with five people, it would be a little difficult, I think.
Yeah, and that's exactly like, oh, here's five guys who have gotten together and they're just pissed off about the way they've been treated. That stuff usually doesn't click. It really doesn't, historically speaking. I mean, you know, show me an example of that working.
Right.
Like the mid-carders unite and, you know, we're going to be upset at the man. It plays to a certain audience, but more often than not, it just doesn't get legs. It just doesn't. It's fun. You mentioned the hacker, and I, you know, you tweeted about it earlier this week. It is so fascinating to me that we've all just moved on from that without batting an eyelash.
It's like big story they were pushing for weeks and weeks and weeks. Just like GTV, right?
Yeah. And they just dropped it. And the thing is, everyone's like, eh, of course they dropped it. I can't stress how for the majority of the time I've watched wrestling, I've been watching wrestling for 34 years, that just didn't happen. That you would see something on TV for weeks, hyped, and it was just went away without a mention.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the way wrestling worked, really, until the last 10 years. And now it just happens all the time. And, you know, if you talk about why is the WWE in the shape it's in, ratings-wise, that plays a part. It's bad storytelling. The irony of the WWE and its... it's all about stories mantra. Is they're correct. It is all about stories. They just tell bad stories.
Yeah.
I mean, think well about put. That. What, like, you show this thing for 4 weeks. Oh, what's this? This seems interesting. And then it's just never spoken of again. I mean, other than like the Mariner, which was that Brutus Beefcake gimmick when he came out and like headbutted a few guys.
Mm.
But then they decided his face is, he can't wrestle, his face is in too bad a shape. Name me anything that was just introduced and dropped without a mention before the Attitude Era.
Man.
You know, I mean, I'm sure people are going to listen to this and they've got time to look it up. I'm sure there's going to be instances, but it didn't. It was very much an exception to the rule. It was just, you know, something that kind of came about. It did happen a little bit in the Attitude Era, to be fair, you know, when business is booming, but it just happens far too much now, and it's a problem. So we shall see. I think an interesting thing, Ryan, another big news item that broke this week is that they're running this Payback pay-per-view like 7 days after SummerSlam.
It's crazy.
You know, shades of this Tuesday in Texas.
Yeah.
Is either Raw Underground or the Retribution group going to play into that? Because I tweeted, unless if you've got a hell of an angle coming out of SummerSlam or some sort of gimmick show, man, running another pay-per-view 7 days after what is theoretically your second or third biggest show of the year seems really odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember when they did Greatest Royal Rumble after Mania? And that was only, what, like 3 weeks later or something? And we were like, man, that's really close to WrestleMania. Now they're doing a show literally a week later.
But again, those shows, as kind of dirty and filthy as they are,
they're not seen as like part of the, what's the term for it? Like part of the main lineage of pay-per-views.
You know, like they're kind of like canon. They sort of exist independent from what's going on weekly on WWE television, right? They just... Right. Bring back a bunch of old timers, have theoretical dream matches. There's some, you know, kind of gimmick deal for a trophy or something. You mentioned Greatest Royal Rumble. They've done a greatest tag team tournament before. So, yeah, those operate sort of independently from WWE television. This, theoretically, you would think, is not going to be like that. I don't think they're going to pay a bunch of, you know, old guys to come back. I don't think Goldberg's going to be on this show. I don't think Undertaker's going to be on the show. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Very, very bizarre. I mean, you would think that this would play a big part. I don't know how they think they can pull off two big shows within a week of each other, given the direction of the business. And I was going to say no live crowds, too, and the excitement level. But apparently they're trying to get something together for SummerSlam. I think Meltzer said Atlantic City. Yeah. So I don't. They might have a few fans there, but who knows?
Some people say the last two times they ran Atlantic City, it felt like there were no fans there for those WrestleManias.
Yeah.
Trump's mausoleum, as it was called by the dirt sheets back then.
Yeah. So, oh my God, I don't know. It's chaos, man. There's so much we could go into with this, with Retribution and what's the motivation for Retribution. And you mentioned the Antifa stuff. And I that was definitely my first inclination, though, is Vince has been watching the news and he's trying to think about how can I work this into a storyline? Because you know that's what he does. But, and so he saw the rioters and the protests and thought, this is perfect for wrestling.
But remember, it's non-political.
Oh, like it has to be the motivation, don't you think?
Yes. Oh, then he watched the news and came up with, yes. Or somebody watched the news. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I completely agree with that. What I really hope doesn't happen is they debut at SummerSlam and interrupt the main event, causing a no contest. And somehow that leads to the need for a pay-per-view 7 days later.
Piss off the audience so they watch again. That's the strategy.
You know, it's funny, the first time they did this, and I actually think we joked about this the last time I was on, when we were talking about like worst pay-per-views ever, because didn't Justin mention this Tuesday in Texas? And I said that can't be considered because how great that Jake Savage angle was on that show. Yeah. But they very, like, anyone who ordered Survivor Series that year got totally screwed because they pulled Savage and Jake off the card so they could work this Tuesday in Texas. They did a, you know, a screw job finishing Hogan and Undertaker and ran it 6 days later. And the concept didn't work. Like, this day, Tuesday in Texas, did not draw well. And that's why they've never attempted anything like that since. Because there was a thought process at the time, if you remember, they were going to try to do these like weekly pay-per-views almost.
Yeah.
And there was just, you know, it bombed so badly, it was never spoken of again.
Jesus. So bad.
And again, that you're running the risk that you're moving too fast to attract casual viewers.
Yeah.
Which is another issue.
All right, guys. Well, this has been a really fun discussion so far. We're not done yet. But before we go any further, we do have to throw a shout out to our good friends over at Bet Online and our brand new sponsors over at Deal Dash. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price that you would never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and it only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash.com is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code TOPROPE or DealDash.fm/TOPROPE. That's DealDash.fm/TOPROPE. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball finally kicked off this past week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry, see what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code Blue Wire. Bet Online, your online wagering experts. All right, let's shift gears here for a second. There was a big story in the news just before we hit record today. Everyone's been talking about it on social media. I tweeted out we're gonna mention it on the show because it's been kind of the talk this morning and this afternoon. Marty Jannetty. I don't want to joke too much about this because I do think he's going through, he has been for a while. I do think he has, you know, some issues. He was part of the CTE lawsuit against WWE. But he put a message, I think it was on his Facebook account. And essentially it was like a public breakup note to a woman that he has been dating. And in the note, he mentioned that when he was a teenager, and I believe Columbus, Georgia is where he grew up, He was working at a bowling alley. And
I don't know if he was working there, but he was at a bowling alley.
He was at a bowling alley, and he was trying to buy some marijuana. And this guy hit on him, and it was a gay man who then was basically dragged him outside around the corner, the way he put it. And Marty noted that that was the first time he made a man disappear. So,
casual confession to murder, apparently.
Yes, that's how this came out. The police department, last I saw in Columbus, Georgia, commented to TMZ that they are looking into it now because didn't he mention a river?
Yes.
Yes.
It was the, pardon me, in the South, all our Southern listeners, if I botch this river name, the Chattahoochee River?
He said something like they should have looked there or something.
Yeah. That was the first time I made a man disappear, quote. He said, quote, they should have looked in the Chattahoochee River. And then, as Meltzer writes it, before continuing to ramble about a Jamaican woman he was in love with.
Yes.
Jannetty is 60, so the alleged incident would have happened at some point in 1973. And you were, by the way, right, Ryan, when you said that he did work at the bowling alley. That is true. I'm reading the report now. So, yeah, he was working at this bowling alley.
So
buying some weed on the job, too.
Not the story I was expecting to see pop up on my news feed when I logged into Twitter for the first time today. But, you know, that's what was going on. And I don't even know what to say. He's said some stuff on his social media in the past too relating to dating women or girls.
I shouldn't be laughing, by the way. Please edit that out.
it's disturbing, and I hope Marty is, you know, getting the help that he needs at this point in time. I don't know, obviously, what's going to come of the story. We'll have to, you know, stay tuned.
He's going to get a lot more than help, I have a feeling.
Yeah, he's deleted the post, so that is now down, but of course there was numerous screenshots of it. So the police department is investigating it, and make of this what you will. You will find all kinds of memes on social media with the barbershop window, and maybe that was actually a face turn, and all kinds of stuff that I've seen on social media today. But strange, very, very bizarre story coming out from Marty Jannetty today.
I love the final two paragraphs of the Observer report. Or I should say the report on F4W Online. Jannetty has been known to make outlandish claims on Facebook frequently, including a 2017 post where he had to later clarify he didn't want to have sex with a woman he once considered his daughter.
Yes.
The that former was what WWF I was star to. Was part of the Rockers tag team with Shawn Michaels, and over 37 runs of the company, he held the tag team titles once with Shawn Waltman and won the Intercontinental Belt. Really, kind of a tale of two different things there, those paragraphs.
That is a shift in narrative. Yeah.
Yes. Jeez. Okay. You mentioned that outlandish behavior in this report, too, from Meltzer did as well, that this is nothing new for Marty. He's been in a downward spiral for quite some time. I mean, wasn't it actually you that texted like the thing on Facebook where he was asking about a clearly underage chick?
Yeah.
Like, not long ago? This was, like, when this weeks ago that you sent that to me?
It was not too long ago.
Oh, yeah. It was you, too. It was obviously you because you're remembering it. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, there's that. I can share this story. So, the WrestleMania that was in Dallas, I was not there, but I had several friends there. And they were at whatever bar WrestleCon was at. And there were a lot of the old-timers were drinking at the hotel bar. And Jannetty was there just freaking bombed out of his mind. And looking to score coke. Pretty loud about it. Was definitely looking to do it. And at one point, ran into the fountain in the middle of the hotel and just started like running around.
Oh my god!
So Marty is a guy who has had problems for a long time. I mean, that's what led to his downfall in wrestling. You know, I've always not liked the term Marty Jannetty of the tag team because it's used in a way, you know, it's used when like one of the guys is less skilled than his partner, right?
Right.
And that's actually not accurate with Marty. The deal with Marty, it was just personal demons.
Yes.
I mean, he was a talented guy. For years, they wanted to split up the Rockers, but they actually didn't know which guy they were going to push. But it came down to, and I think Sean mentioned this in his DVD, like I think Heartbreak and Triumph was the one where he's like, I decided to clean up, Marty didn't. And mm-hmm. that made the decision really easy for WWE.
Yeah, Marty was always a very good worker. Yeah. And you remember when when he got brought back, but then that got messed up because he couldn't travel or something. There was something about, was he on parole or something? Like WWE had wanted to re-sign him because they brought him back. Was this in the lead up to the Angle Michaels match?
Oh yeah, the 2005. Yes, yes, and that was a problem.
He had that really good match with Kurt Angle. I think I want to say SmackDown, and then they wanted to re-sign him. He did such a good job, but then like he couldn't travel because there was legal issues or something.
I mean, he got fired in early '93 for failing a drug test after I think he had already failed the drug test before the match at the 93 Rumble, and they just did the match and fired him right away. And then they bring him back. He wins the Intercontinental title in a great angle. He loses to Shawn in what actually won 1993 match of the year. I don't think that really was the 1993 match of the year in WWF, but it won it at the time. Him and 1-2-3 Kid were a fun tag team, but yeah, I mean, these personal issues have just plagued him for 25 years. And, you know, if this is true, it's that's really bad. I think we need to state that for the record.
But to your point, like to say someone is the Marty Jannetty, that implies that one guy is really, really great and the other guy is not good at all. And that wasn't really the case with the Rockers. They were both very skilled. And Sean just cleaned up a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you want to like call someone a severely less talented member of the team, say he's the Stevie Ray of the team. Now, I know Stevie sometimes gets very upset when people, you know, make fun of him on podcasts and the like, but whatever. If he hears that, he can rip me and threaten to kick my ass. I have no problem with that. But, you know, that's a more thing, because Marty Jannetty was a talented guy. It's just, you know, I mean, again, though, if this is true, this is a guy with a lot of problems. If you're in a spot where you're just like, even if it's not true, it's really terrible because that you're just like sort of casually talking about making people disappear in these Facebook rants.
Right.
That's not a place that anyone should be in.
Right. So on that note, let's shift gears to our final topic today. And this is kind of
right turns you're navigating here, buddy.
this is 90s related as well, as we're looking at kind of back in time here. But last night, Tuesday night on FS1, they aired at SummerSlam 92, really an iconic wrestling pay-per-view from the WWF at the time. And they did a watch along on the social media apps that you could join. And CM Punk was on there. Renee Young was on there. I believe Bret Hart was on there.
Yes. You didn't watch this?
I did not see the live watch along, but I might go back and check out some of it.
Okay. I think Bret again made a point to talk about how much he carried Davey Boy Smith.
Yeah. So if you didn't know.
Okay. What a fucking legend that we're still. It's completely true, folks.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's
I
true.
Love that on a watch log, he's still hammering that point. God bless Bret Hart. Like, I saw someone on Twitter, like, Renee asked about the match, and Bret immediately launched into the story that he always goes into. Yeah, that was a real good carry job by me.
So. Yeah, basically, if you don't know the story, Davey Boy, like, forgot everything they had planned, went blank when they went out there, then he blew up, aka got really, really tired. Bret carried him through the match. It's true. You can watch it. You can kind of see it. But Bret always talks about how, you know, that was looked at as Davey's shining moment, but he always uses the term that it was his shining moment because he carried Davey through the match, and it was this really good match. So it was a great match. The show itself, Kyle, is something that you wanted to discuss, though, because you think there's some correlation from 92 SummerSlam into present day, and actually just, I think, a lot of things that have happened with WWE over the years.
Yeah, and before I do that, I just want to talk about one other thing. You know, we talked about how the term Marty Jannetty of the team is misused. The term carry job is misused a lot, too. You know, Shawn Michaels did not carry The Undertaker in the first Hell in a Cell match. They both played their roles perfectly. It's just that Shawn's role was bumping around like a madman.
Mm.
You know, The Undertaker actually played his role very well in that match. That being said, SummerSlam 92 was the definition of a carry job. That is a correct use of the term carry job. I mean, Bret just carried Davey Boy kicking and screaming, and it was like, you know, a parent, you know, holding their kid going through the zoo, man. It was all Bret, and it's what led to him getting the title out of nowhere a few months later. So I did want to, though, talk about the legacy of SummerSlam 92, like you mentioned, Ryan, because it's really interesting when you think about it and compare it to today. So SummerSlam 92, for those who don't know, has this incredible dichotomy business-wise. it set the record attendance-wise for the company. Did a legit 80,000. That record stood for 24 years till WrestleMania 32 broke it. But it bombed on pay-per-view. Like, bombed bad. And that's, like, really fascinating to me. And if you look at the two components separately, there's a lot of stuff that makes you think of modern WWE. So SummerSlam 92 was really the first time that the name WWE, then WWF, drew. It was not a match that drew that house. It was the name WWE. Domestically, WWE was in a lot of trouble in 1992. But over in the UK, it was red hot. And, you know, they started running all those European tours in the early 90s. And that was like their, you know, their big money stuff in that period. They had, I think 91 was the first year they went over there. And, well, the first time it was actually late 89. You could see those matches on, like, the World Tour tapes. The Rockers worked the Rougeaus. That's just a random recommendation if you haven't seen those. But 91 was the first time they did a European tour proper. And they did that, the show that Davey Boy wins the Battle Royal. What's that, like, the Royal Albert Hall show?
Yeah.
Okay. And then 92, in the spring, right after Mania, they had another big tour. And that's what led the decision to do SummerSlam. But it wasn't a match that led to them doing the record attendance. It was the name WWE. And that's something we see today, right? All the time. It's, right. You know, WrestleMania sells out before, or comes close to selling out before a match is announced. It's just because people want to go to WrestleMania, people want to see WWE. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing. This was the first time that really happened. You know, it was unheard of for a show to do any kind of, like, big business before the main event was announced.
Mm-hmm.
In that day.
Yeah. And then on the it's a good point for sure. Yeah.
And on the flip side, you have the show bombing on pay-per-view. Now, Linda McMahon, and I think Triple H has subsequently said as well, try to, like, laughably put the blame on the fact the show aired on tape delay. Folks, the number of people that would have found out the results between the time that they happened and it actually aired in the States was so minimal in 1992.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that that had any real effect on the buy rate is just not true. It just isn't. Sorry. The reason the show bombed was twofold. One, it was the first pay-per-view without Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it was the first time, really, Vince McMahon kind of tore up his existing plans and just booked a new card.
Yeah.
Do you remember? That was the SummerSlam you thought you'd never see. Now, were you watching WWF at this time or no, Ryan?
Not religiously, kind of off and on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I was fascinated. I think it was a year or so ago, they put all those 92 superstars up on the network. And what I presume were mostly younger fans that did not live through that era were watching it. And they were like, oh, they were like kind of like just, you know, joking about like the characters they saw and some of the feuds that were starting. And then I saw multiple people saying, hey, wait a minute, they just dropped everything and they're just announcing random matches. And for those who didn't live through that, originally SummerSlam was going to be held in Washington, D.C. and was going to be main evented by Randy Savage, Ric Flair as the world title match, and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels doing the first ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
Once they decided it was going to be England, obviously it made a lot of sense to put Davey Boy Smith in a feature position. So he took Shawn's spot. And then the Savage Flair program was running on fumes, quite frankly, by the end of the summer. So they threw Warrior in Flair's place. And Flair didn't even work the show, which is like insane. But even like going through the undercard, all these feuds that you see start at the beginning of the summer that normally, in any other time period before WWE, like prior to that, would have been blown off, or they would have done matches at SummerSlam. They just didn't happen. It was just all like Undertaker was feuding with Berserker. All of a sudden, they announced him and Kamala, who just came out of nowhere. Michaels did a heel match with Rick Martel. It's crazy. I remember watching it at the time. I'm an 11-year-old kid, and I'm like, what? What is going on here? Because like by that point, I was kind of good. It's like, okay, these two guys were feuding on TV. They were going to wrestle at the next pay-per-view. I kind of caught on to that concept. And they just were announcing what seemed to be random matches. And what do you know? Nowadays, this happens all the time. Where it seems they have a plan, they're going in a direction, Vince gets tired of it, he's like, no, this kind of sucks. And they just kind of rebook on the fly.
Yeah.
And guess what? It doesn't ever do well. Draw well. And so this was the SummerSlam 92, the legacy to me, first time the brand drew well, was able to draw a big house, but at the same time, it did not work on pay-per-view because plans change, brother.
Yeah. From what I could find here, 92 SummerSlam did 280,000 buys, which was down from 405,000 in 91.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge dive in the number of buys.
And just to put those numbers in perspective again for people who maybe don't know the history, the Zahorian verdict had happened right before SummerSlam 91. And to be honest, the fact that that show did over 400,000 was considered like a miracle at the time. But the scandals kept getting worse for WWF, to the point that Hogan obviously had to leave after WrestleMania 8. You had the Ring Boy stuff break out. The press the WWF was getting over the course of 1992 was just really, really bad. And that played a role too. To be honest, that was also a thing. It should be pointed out as well. It just wasn't plans change. It was, you know, the company was scandal ridden at that time too. But I've always thought that, you know, the plans change did play a role. And it's interesting when you compare it to today.
Yeah. It's also interesting when you look at the top four guys on that show with, you know, Savage and Warrior, which once again, Randy Savage carrying Ultimate Warrior to one of his best matches, and then Brett and Bulldog, two of those four guys within a couple of months were gone from the company.
Yes. Right?
Warrior and Bulldog were out. So,
and Savage was kind of just put on the shelf.
Right.
Cause Vince thought he was done. He didn't even work the next year's WrestleMania.
Right. So it's kind of a bizarre show to go back and watch when you know what happens right afterwards. But I had never really thought about that, Kyle. That's a really good point. The brand drew the house, and that kind of became the trend for later on.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the case, like, subsequently. I mean, main events still mattered, but, you know, I think, you know, the modern WrestleManias, that's all, you know, I don't think it's always, you know, people was talking about, oh, my God, you would think the WWE would be doing, like, its golden era based on how WrestleMania sells. Well, it's just the brand that sells. It's not like a match that we do. So, yeah.
All right, I think we got time, Kyle, for a mailbag segment. Let's do two questions from the mailbag. But before we do, have to throw out one more shout out, and this is to our good friends over at Manscaped. And guys, you're going to want to listen to this one. Support for Top Rope Nation is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Men, listen up. Have you ever gone to do a little body hair grooming, but instead of walking away looking freshly cut and ready for whatever or whomever life throws at you, you slice yourself with a blade and come away looking like Ric Flair's forehead in the 1980s. No longer. That's right. You need to check out the newest partner of Top Rope Nation, Manscaped. Guys, this isn't some BS ad read where I'm just reading a script and moving on to whatever Kyle and Justin have next on the agenda. No, this is actually legit. I am holding the product in my hands right now as I'm telling you about the great product from Manscaped. The fine folks over there were nice enough to send us the Perfect Package 3.0 set to try out the product ourselves. And I gotta say, you owe it to yourself to pick up this product. Listen to this. Their new body hair trimmer, perfectly named the Lawnmower 3.0, is absolutely insane. That's what I'm holding right now. Here, just give it a listen. That is 7,000 RPMs. With Quiet Stroke technology. This blade is insane. It's super smooth. It's safe. The Manscaped engineering team just spent 18 months designing this electric trimmer. It's water resistant and can be used in the shower. It has an LED light for more precise trimming. And maybe most importantly, so that you don't end up getting color like a 1980s wrestler, it features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents, thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. I assure you, everything about this trimmer is smooth. Like I said, I've been enjoying the Perfect Package 3.0 set, which comes with this electric trimmer here, a sweet leather bag for the trimmer, and a whole lot of other goodies for a great price. It's truly a must-have. Everything you'll ever need for male grooming again is right here. No more using the same razor for your face and your nether regions. My God, who wants to do that, guys? This is the 21st century. Maybe you're looking for something different. That's fine. They have all kinds of other products as well. Check out their shaving mats, foot deodorant, cologne, nail grooming kits, nose hair trimmers, and even breath mints. And here we go. We've got a great deal for you as a listener of Top Rope Nation. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TOPROPENATION, all one word, no spaces, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code TOPROPENATION. Guys, you owe this to yourselves. Check it out. All right, Kyle, let's, you know, we haven't done this in a few shows. Let's do a couple mailbag questions. If you guys haven't been listening, we are doing mailbag segments, I'd say more often than not, over the last few weeks. In fact, we did an entire mailbag show on one of our Monday shows a couple weeks ago. A lot of fun. Check that out in the archives. And one of the big positives of doing these is that if you send in a question to topropenation@gmail.com, you'll find that in our show description. If we read the question on the air, we will send you a free Top Rope Nation sticker. Very simple. In fact, this one comes from our friend Randall in Ottawa, Canada. He sent in a question a few weeks back. I sent him the sticker. He told me he got it. And he sent in another one. And this one really made my ears perk up, Kyle, because when I saw the subject line, he writes, "Controversial question if you dare."
Uh-oh.
So...
we dare.
Yeah, we're daring, Randall. We're going to read
this one. We'll take the dare, I should say.
So, I have a question if your group wishes to tackle. He says, "I'm a 66-year-old wrestling fan. He's been watching since he was 5 because of his papa. I listened to numerous podcasts in his retirement." And he says, "Since AEW got rolling, I've noticed a trend from many of them," speaking about the podcasts. He says, "When AEW loses in the ratings, a good number start searching out excuses for the loss. In one podcast 2 weeks ago, a well-known commentator said that when results came out blowing AEW away, he immediately looked to see if there was political debate, sports, or anything else going on to explain the results. Here's a novel reason maybe NXT's product was superior." He says, "Question, are the podcasters afraid to offend AEW for some reason, or are some sucking up to them online to try to get a job with them?" He says, "To me, it's a legit question because I've stopped listening to some podcasts because they are so one-sided. What do we think?"
Okay. The AEW bias thing is something you hear about a lot. It's not like this is the first time it's ever been brought up. I cannot speak for everybody. I try to be objective. I know we all try to be objective on this show. We joke a lot about the time that, you know, I think that's like a kind of a catchphrase. What do we try to be on the show? Objective, right?
Yep.
I don't know. Why do they start searching for excuses? I don't know. I mean, sometimes some people do seem a little bit biased, like they're rooting a little bit for AEW, when I can see where some people would get that impression. But that said, I mean, the reason that a show does well in the ratings isn't necessarily because it's better. Right. I mean, now if people are just looking to make, like, you know, what did the guy say? Oh, he immediately, when AEW lost,
he was looking for like what the competition on television was.
Yeah, but it really wouldn't make it that much sense that said competition would hurt AEW more, any more or less than it would NXT.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what podcast that was, so I can't really comment on it. You know, I don't feel comfortable saying, "Oh yeah, I heard," because I didn't hear it. If I would have heard it, I'd be like, "Yeah, that guy was totally making excuses." We talked about it, I know, and I think we were pretty forthright that the reason NXT did well those couple weeks and beat AEW in overall viewership was they built to a winner-take-all or, you know, title-for-title match,
yeah,
which was viewed as a big deal. And then we said, well, where do they go from there? I wouldn't be surprised if AEW started winning again, and that's precisely what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So
in a big way, I mean, they came back and really destroyed NXT after the week after.
I've been, again, it's my opinion only. You don't have to agree with it. I think AEW is a superior product to NXT. That is a subjective take. Keep in mind, I'll be very. If you disagree, that you're right. I have been pretty upfront that I think NXT has fallen off a cliff the last 2 years.
Mm.
Generally speaking, I think a lot of the same issues I see on Raw and SmackDown now plague NXT. So I don't know. Yeah, there is a little bit of AEW bias, but at the same time, it goes back to what we were talking about with the stuff that WWE just introduced on Raw, right?
Mm.
And why people are skeptical. It's because they have a bad track record.
Yeah.
And people really do want there to be alternatives to WWE. And am I personally rooting for there to be an... Yes, I am. I'll be honest with you. I want AEW to succeed.
I mean, it helps out the entire industry. It helps us out. We're podcast, you know. Yeah. We want listeners, and we get more listeners when wrestling's clicking and there's something hot going on. And if it's just WWE, I mean, the entire business ebbs and flows with WWE. We want multiple companies having success, you know.
And again, I can only speak for our podcast. Randall, if you want to go back and listen to the end of the year, 2019, I was very critical of Dynamite.
Oh, yeah. We got into a point where we, all of us, were thinking that.
Yeah, I talked about how it was a show that seemingly had no idea how to click with casual viewers. It was just booking to its existing fan base. It was the way it was being written, it really didn't have much of a hope to expand. Now, they course corrected at the beginning of the year and have been very good, quite frankly. With the demo stuff, I can see, you know, that's been a big topic of debate. Like, you know, because, you know, NXT was winning the overall viewership. And then all of a sudden, when that happened, there was this, everyone kept stressing the demo. The demo is the most important thing, not overall viewership. I can see how that would be taken as being biased towards AEW.
Mm.
And I thought we were pretty careful in how we discussed that NXT did deserve credit for winning the overall viewership. But at the same time, now it's a moot point.
Right.
Because AEW wins overall and the demo. So.
Right.
And it's a better show.
Yeah. So I think, hey, thanks for the question, Randall. It's a thought-provoking one. Like I said, we've sent Randall his free sticker, but he sent in another good question. So we thought we'd read it on the air. If you guys want to get involved, send a question to topropenation@gmail.com. If we read it, we'll get that sticker out to you. We got time for one more. This comes from our friend Greg in Ohio. Greg writes in, and this is kind of ironic because when he sent this question 7 days ago, he didn't know what was going to happen on Raw this week. He says... Did the Bret and Austin versus McMahon angles and stories taint WWE product in the last 20 years or so? He says, we seem to be getting away from that now, knock on wood. But before that angle, Austin versus McMahon, there wasn't significant time given to authority figure storylines. He says, it's been a constant since. He says, the McMahons, Triple H versus the company, all of that. Do you think it sticks once crowds come back, live audience? Or do you think that Triple H, Stephanie, Vince will interject themselves again because of the crowd reactions that they get? So I guess the big question overall is, do we think that we're getting away from authority figure storylines, and do you think that those have tainted the business? Now, ironically, Shane McMahon returned to Raw on Monday night. We don't really know if that's going to be like authority angle or what, where they're going with that, as we talked about earlier in the show. But certainly the Austin versus McMahon thing encouraged them to do more of that authority versus underdog type thing. So, Kyle, do you think that that has tainted the product at all in the last 20 years?
That's a really complex question.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Okay, so there is no disputing how successful Austin McMahon was in the WWE kind of narrative of how it overtook WCW and became the worldwide leader that it is today. Won the Monday Night War, and is now, and for years was the only major company in the wrestling company in the United States. There was a point, though, where the authority figure gimmick jumped the shark. I can actually point to a specific point in time. I thought it was WrestleMania 2000, where the show was built around not so much the four competitors in the match, but the fact there was a McMahon in every corner.
Yeah, that was a very disappointing WrestleMania.
That sure. is when I thought the McMahons began overplaying their hand on television. And after that, there became the issue where, if you go back and watch those 98, 99 Raws, Vince would always give to the, you know, usually Austin or if it was Rock, the performer he was in the ring with, right? Like, he would kind of be scared.
Great facial reactions. Yes.
He had these great, it was showing ass is the insider term. Mm. Well, somewhere, and I think it was around like 2002, 2003, he stopped doing that. And he sort of like believed, like the perception was that he was now the equal of the performers in his company, which is ludicrous. Athletically.
Yeah.
You know, he started like kind of bought like the Mr. McMahon, like, you know, remember like the build up to the 1999 Royal Rumble, those vignettes where Vince was training and it was like really tongue in cheek. That was good, even though the 1999 Royal Rumble sucks ass, but those vignettes were good. But then it became a thing where Vince just became kind of a mark for himself.
Yes.
In subsequent years, and like walking out with a huge physique, and, you know, he was the athletic equal of his opponent, which is just, again, it's ridiculous. It was okay when he wrestled Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 19, even though that match was disappointing as a draw. Vince has actually never been a great pay-per-view draw. None of the McMahons have, in terms of that. You know, obviously, Vince is the one who's been put into key positions more so than Shane and or certainly Stephanie. But if you look back at the history of Vince McMahon on pay-per-view, even the match he had with Austin, I've mentioned this on the show before, it did basically the same number of buys as Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Part 56 that month. And that was like the time when WCW really started dying on the vine.
Yeah.
And that's like incredible to look back and realize that those shows did basically the same number of buys. It was both in the 450,000 range. But the authority figures needed to go away, to answer Greg's question a long time ago. It's funny when you watch old wrestling, like, matches were made, angles happened, money was drawn without these TV authority figures. And they kind of don't have them. They have, you know, like the GMs went away.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, in recent years, and that didn't really matter. It's not like it made the product worse.
Yeah.
Just like it didn't, like, I don't think Kurt Angle, just to use an example, I don't think he, like, necessarily added any value as the Raw GM to the product.
No,
like, I think Raw would have been any better or worse without him.
All it did is just kind of give him a way to explain why matches were happening. That's pretty much it. It's just very indifferent.
Yeah, it's a storyline crutch.
Yeah,
essentially. You know, I mean, I don't like, on the flip side, when wrestlers just come out and are like demand a match and then it happens. It's like, well, what was supposed to happen in the show if they hadn't demanded that match?
Yeah.
Like, was there just like a big gaping hole in the 2-hour broadcast that, oh, well, you know, I know nothing else is set for the next 20 minutes of the show, so let's you and I wrestle. I mean, that doesn't really make sense either. But
let's show a pay-per-view match from last month. We know they've done that a few times.
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah, but yeah, you don't need a McMahon or an authority figure to make the product work.
Right.
You don't. And yeah, again, I think you could go back 20 years and the McMahons jumped the shark, quite frankly, on TV. They've had their moments. I think they worked opposite Daniel Bryan in that storyline.
Yeah. I thought this was an interesting question because it kind of goes very well with something that another project that I just done. I talked about this on the show a week ago. But I actually went back with our friend Zach Haydorn over at PW Torch, and we rewatched all of the 1999 Steve Austin pay-per-view matches. Kyle, you just mentioned the 99 Rumble and the St. Valentine's Day match in February of 99. Mm-hmm. And this was actually, we had a discussion on the show. It's two parts. You can check it out in the VIP section over in PW Torch. It's really good discussion. I had a lot of fun doing it. But at one point I brought up the fact that, you know, even watching that, I got a little bit of McMahon burnout. But at the same time, I couldn't really fault them for doing it because it had only been, you know, I guess a year and a half by the time you got to that King of the Ring ladder match that they did with the McMahons versus Austin. But I guess what I said on the show was I was looking at it retroactively knowing that Steve Austin's run on top was pretty short. And so I found myself when I was rewatching 99 and seeing him spending all this time with these McMahon storylines thinking like, especially when once we got to King of the Ring, there were other people I would have rather seen him in the ring with during a pay-per-view main event than Vince and Shane, you know. But like, it's hard to fault him at the time because it was such a hot angle. But it's a good question by Greg, because it does make you wonder, since that works so well, is that why they kept going back to it? Absolutely. Have they done too much of it? I think they have done too much of it, but they've had times where it worked, like you mentioned with Daniel Bryan and everything. But even in the time, I think by the summer of 99, it was starting to lose some steam.
Yeah, it was. And remember the summer of 99, and obviously since you just went through it, you know this, they took McMahon off TV.
Yes.
In the summer, because the thought was it had run its course. Yeah. Was it like fully loaded or something? It was the end of an era match or something? Like if Undertaker lost, Vince was gone?
Yes.
Right? So there was a thought process that it had run its course then. And it kind of had. Now, a real key was in that 98-99 era, the WWF had no depth.
That is true. We talked about that, too.
Which is a big reason that you had to kind of always have Vince, because you essentially had Austin, Rock, Foley, Taker, and Kane.
Triple H was still like on the come up. He wasn't really established as a main eventer yet, you know.
I'm sorry, who was that?
Triple H wasn't even really established.
Yeah,
he was still on the come up.
What were they trying?
Early in 99, like you watch him in the Rumble, you know, he's still DX Triple H. So he's not really a main eventer yet. So yeah, it was difficult for Austin to have challengers that you would really buy. And that was one of the big problems with the 99 Rumble, is there's all these guys that come out where you're like, none of them have a chance to win. None of these people are going to WrestleMania. And, you know, like they had good wrestlers, but not people that you could buy at the top of the card. But it did seem like that was the year that they really went all in with the McMahons, because that's when Stephanie got involved. Right. Mm-hmm. That's when you started seeing Linda a little bit, Vince, Shane. Like that was when they really started to jump the shark. And that kind of started that formula that we have seen now for 20 years. So 99 was a pivotal role in that sense. And with what Greg is asking about, I think. So you go back to then and that's where it all kind of started.
And yeah, like I said, they had the idea at the next WrestleMania. Yep. You know, we're going to book it basically around the fact that there's a McMahon in every corner. Wasn't it? Andrew from the Matt Men podcast, I hope he said this on air. I know we had the discussion with him that WWE has basically become not a wrestling promotion, but a show about a family that owns a wrestling promotion.
Yeah. I can't remember if that was on air or not, but go back. You know, it was about a month or two ago.
Yeah, I can't remember if we were actually recording when we had that discussion, but I know the three of us talked about it, and he's completely accurate. It became, once you started putting McMahon's on the same level of star as your wrestlers, I think it's had a detrimental effect towards the wrestlers. I really do. And look, it's their promotion. They can do whatever the hell they want. Yeah. Okay, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Okay, they can do whatever the hell they want. They own the company. I just think it's not a good idea, quite frankly, because this is a company that has not done a great job creating stars over the last 15 years, which is why you see the McMahons constantly being brought back and stars of the past being brought back.
Yeah. Yeah, that was episode, I believe, 142. Mid-May, we had Andrew on for two shows. You can dip into the archives and check those out. But good questions. Like I said, send us a question, topropenation@gmail.com. We'll get to it on the air. And if we read it, we'll send you the free gift in the mail. So with that said, make sure you are following us on all of our social media feeds. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Top Rope Nation. We are on Facebook as well. In fact, we also have a discussion group on Facebook that I'm trying to get more active. We started it years ago, never really took off. I posted a link to it on our Twitter page. Anyone can join. You can interact with us more on a daily basis. Get some discussions going. Also, just search it on Facebook. It's Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion is the name of the group. We'll add you to the group if you are so inclined. And of course, wherever you have been listening to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any shows coming up from us on Thursdays and Mondays. And leave us a rating. Leave us a written review. If you leave a written review, we'll read it on the air. So with that said, Kyle, it's been great having you back in the saddle. Hopefully we can work out our schedule and get all three of us back on the air again real soon. But I'm sure the listeners enjoyed your return to the broadcast tonight.
Yeah, it was great to be back, and always fun to talk about things. The show always picks up when we go back in time.
Oh, yeah. Way. Yes, we love that kind of discussion.
As soon as we hit SummerSlam 92 and the questions, I began to feel strength. You know, it's so much
Kyle's
more exciting to
pour a drink after
that.
The podcast here.
What's that?
You're going to have to pour a drink after the podcast now to celebrate.
Yes, yes.
Good talk. Good discussion. Good. Always good talking with you, Kyle. You can follow Kyle on Twitter. He's at TRPKyle. I am at Ryan Droste, Droste. We'll see you guys on Monday morning. Have a great weekend.
Peace.